Outside, they found the street strangely empty, the long shadow stretching into a wider darkness as the sun fell below the western horizon.
We should not remain here through the night.
I thought you wanted to test that writ Gwydra gave you.
Not here in some village whose name I hardly know. Pride Town is only a few days' march south of here.
Got more friends there?
And probably more enemies.
Best get your thoughts back to what's around you.
Jameson drew him from the inevitable memories inspired by being so near to Pride. Branson perked up immediately, but gave no indication that he and Jameson were on to whomever might be watching them. Branson began using the techniques Jameson had shown him. If there were men in the area watching him, where would they be? And if they were watching the road and not the two men walking in the brush to the side of it, then where? Branson felt his blood pumping, felt the rush of adrenaline coursing his veins. The brooch on his head called to him then, a confusing jumble of possibilities. And a pathway, he saw suddenly, an invitation. He grabbed Jameson's shoulder and motioned for him to stop, then closed his eyes and let his spirit fly free of his corporeal form, sliding through the brooch into the open air. Invisible, propelled by will without constraint, the disembodied spirit of Branson Garibond darted all about the area impossibly fast. He passed near one would-be ambusher, crouched in a tree, and marked the spot, thinking to move along. He sensed the man's thoughts completely and honestly. As expected, he was here hoping to catch or kill the highwayman. The man was thinking of the bounty, of the glory, of how King Yezelnik and Bonagran would reward him when he brought in the highwayman's head. Not surprised, Branson again started to move along to will his spirit back, but he couldn't. Suddenly, Branson felt a compulsion he had not known before. Unable to mount a defense or argument against it, he found himself sliding into the ambusher's body. A wall of outrage and denial came up against him, the man instinctively battling against this awful intrusion, this invasion into his very being. He flailed mentally and physically, and the movement cost him his balance, and he tumbled from the branch, crashing through the tree to land in a shocking jolt against the hard ground. The jarring landing expelled Branson's spirit instantly. A wave of disorientation overwhelmed him and left him lost in the ether. He saw one spot of light, warm and inviting, and instinctively made for it. Back in his own body, Branson nearly swooned and fell over. A hand slapped over his mouth and held him fast, then pulled him to the ground. He realized where he was when he was finally able to open his eyes and see Jameson staring at him incredulously. Branson could only shrug in response, since he wasn't even really sure what had just happened. It was the fallen man. Branson had felt more than one of the poor fellow's limbs breaking. Others nearby shifted in the branches and the brush, wondering if battle was upon them.
They're here to kill us.
Well, yes.
Jameson held up four fingers and pointed toward the noise. Branson somehow understood and nodded, slipped his mask down over his eyes, and started that way. The scout pulled and strung his bow in one fluid motion, then moved off the other way, disappearing into the brush. Circling wide of the fallen man, keeping him between them and the road, Branson noted more movement. After his spiritual flight, he knew exactly where to look. He made out one man creeping toward the writhing victim, another in the tree, as well as a third. Another man appeared along the road the way Branson had come.
I just fell!
An arrow slicing through the tall grass cut him short.
I'm shot!
A second arrow cracked into the wood at that location, a perfect shot that pinned the speaker's hand to the branch.
Down, to the northwest!
And here!
Branson sprung into their midst. He cut a downward stroke across the back of one man's legs. The second man thrust at him, but Branson's powerful blade picked off that thrust with enough force to send the sword flying from the man's hand. Branson's elbow hit the man hard in the nose. Branson turned on the man he had slashed, still standing exactly as Branson had left him, reaching back to grasp his torn leg. He stepped to gain momentum, then leaped and laid flat out, his legs tucked tight. He landed lightly and sprang back up just as the man Jameson had shot in the hand dropped to the ground before him. His right hand bloody and tucked in tight, he brandished a dagger.
You would make me kill you?
Branson punctuated his question with a sudden thrust that left the tip of his sword resting under the man's chin. Branson dove away, an arrow coming at his position. The knife man stumbled away. Branson let him go, focusing instead on the two archers who had a bead on his position. One archer. as Jameson's next arrow took one through the upper arm. The second man sent off another arrow, and it cracked into the tree by his face. Branson let it go, leaving the man to Jameson as three more men appeared directly across the road and coming hard for Branson. Two brandished shields and swords, the third a shield and bronze-tipped spear.
I arrest you, highwayman!
Branson met their charge with one of his own and hit them with a barrage of thrusts and slashes. Branson tossed the sword to his right hand and heeded the call of his brooch, though he knew not what it was saying. Driven by some subconscious thought, he thrust his arm and the blade high to his right. Branson managed to glance up at his blade as the flames danced about the carved silverel blade. Branson jumped between them. His brooch screamed new possibilities. He grabbed the half-spear of the man to his left, neutralizing any immediate attacks, and sent his sword in a down and around parry at the sword coming at him to his left. He caught the blade with his own and continued his movement, sending both weapons up high, then turned and snapped off a succession of quick elbow smashes. The spearman bold rushed from the right, or started to, but Branson quickly let go of his spear, planted his hand against the leading shield, and let the power of the brooch flow through him. Before he even realized what he had done, he noted the spearman flying backward, as if he had been thrown from a catapult. Branson spun fast, the one remaining foe coming in hard. Again, the highwayman invoked the power of his new brooch, and the attacker stopped suddenly in turn, slashing with abandon. He kept on fighting as if against some unseen demon. Jameson walked up to Branson and looked at the swordsman with puzzlement. Then back to Branson. The highwayman merely shrugged, took a step forward to the side of the fighter, tapped him on the shoulder, and when the man finally glanced his way, smashed him hard in the nose with the pommel of his sword.
What was that about?
Branson pointed to the tip of the brooch holding the smoky quartz, the gemstone of illusion.
I guess his eyes were crossed.
Gather them that aren't dead and disarm them.
Branson started to round up the rogues, slapping them up to the road with his sword, when he noticed the first man Jameson had shot in the gut curled on the ground.
That one's near dead.
Branson went to the mortally wounded man. He eased the man onto his back. The arrow was deep into the man's belly, his guts all torn up. Branson put one hand up to his brooch and set the other firmly on the man's stomach, the arrow shaft tight against the crook between his thumb and forefinger. He sent waves of healing energy into the man, almost anesthetizing him with a blast of concentrated warmth. Branson yanked the arrow out. Branson held the wounded man down and put his hand immediately back to the ghastly wound. Many heartbeats passed. Branson, holding the pose, continuing the flow of healing magic. He found the man's line of Ki Chi Kri fluctuating wildly. He used the connection of the Soul Stone to coax it back to straight. After many minutes, the man's Ki Chi Kri finally settled.
The highwayman is not your enemy.
Branson straightened on his knees and turned to regard Jameson and the prisoners.
The highwayman is not your enemy. Now be quick and get your friend to a warm bed. Care for him, and he will live.
Branson walked back toward the group.
Go on then, and go fast, before I slip with this bowstring and put one of you down in the dirt.
They scrambled at that, past Branson, who seemed not to notice.
Good choice.
I couldn't let him die.
He tried to kill you.
He didn't know any better, but now...
Now what? Now you don't know, and the whole group might come back at us in a day or two.
You said it was a good choice.
Yep. And I figured out why that pretty K-Dale fell in love with you.
Branson just shook his head and, with a glance back at the group, followed Jameson into the brush.
If you're thinking this to be a clean war of minor wounds, then you're a fool. I hope you've got the stomach to kill a man when you need to.
I know a couple of former Sam Haste priests, a young thug, and a former laird who would vouch for me on that point.
Glad you can do it. And gladder still that you don't prefer it that way.
Alas, Brother Faltus.
Brother Pinhour spoke as his fellow monk from the Chapel of Precious Memories was shoved before the imposing line of Laird Panley Maris's considerable force. Pinhour leaned on the crenellated wall of Chapel La Belle's gate tower roof, along with all the principals of the Mother Chapel and the visiting dignitaries from Vanguard, including Kaydale and Callan. Hands bound behind his back, poor Faltus couldn't hold his balance and fell hard to the ground. A few feet behind the battered monk, sitting astride a large gray mare and dressed in splendid bronze armor, Laird Panlaimaris didn't blink, and none of his attendants moved to help poor Fatus back to his feet. Panlaimaris said something to the man standing beside his horse, who sprinted across the field to the man who was positioned not far below Chapel of Bell's imposing wall.
Your answer to King Yezelnik's edict is unacceptable. You will release the prisoners loyal to King Yezelnik. The others, and the highwayman, will be turned over to Laird Panlaimaris.
The highwayman? How could he know?
The Gelb.
Brother Giavno shook his head.
Good. They think he's here.
Kaedale pulled her mother close.
It saddens me to see how far my old friend Gilb has fallen.
Father Arto Levin seemed very weary and old indeed that day.
And all because of foolish pride.
What say you, Father Arto Levin? My laird grows impatient.
Dame Gwydra stepped up beside Father Arto Levin.
I too rule a holding of haunts. A large one, and no enemy of, or stranger to, the sailors of Palmaris Town. Make your Laird Panlaimaris aware that an attack on Chapel of Bell at this time is also an attack on Dame Gwydra of Vanguard.
The relay man looked to the courier, who nodded. He ran back across the field, and the dame's words were told to Laird Panlaimaris. His answer came back immediately, for he obviously had known that Dame Gwydra and her contingent were present at Chapel of Bell.
My Laird Panlaimaris offers you sanctuary, good Lady of Vanguard. You, and those loyal to you, may leave Chapel of Bell now by ship or through the front gate. This is not your disagreement.
My fight, you mean, for you come with swords.
The courier had no response. Gwydra looked around at the monks, who were all staring at her with breath held, and smiled her assurance.
There your laird airs, my friend. This is my disagreement. I and my vanguardsmen will not leave Chapel of Bell at this time. Tell Laird Panlaimaris that Dame Gwydra and Vanguard stand with Father Arto Levin as guests in his good home. Explain that your laird, too, is welcome here, where we may speak of these pressing issues before rash decisions are made that cannot be undone.
Laird Panlaimaris's response came back in mere heartbeats.
Father Arto Levin's decree of disobedience to the throne, if it stands, thus does end all discussion.
It stands, and I stand with Father Arto Levin. Pray tell your laird that he should consider very wisely his next actions.
The proclamation, so final and clear, lifted the hearts of all the brothers. Word went back and came forward, and the courier's pause as Panlaimaris's response was whispered into his ear, foretold ill.
We have prisoners, Father Arto Levin. Surrender the prisoners loyal to King Yezelnik. For these men who would not denounce you, your brethren, are declared guilty of treason against the throne of King Yezelnik and shall be punished accordingly.
Treason? They have done nothing!
They refused the leniency of Laird Panlaimaris and the choice of the new father of the Chapel of Precious Memories, Father de Gilb. This is my Laird Panlaimaris' last word. Release the prisoners loyal to King Yezelnik at once, or witness the consequences.
I cannot do this, but am I to witness the executions of innocent men?
Perhaps we should let them go.
And then he will demand that we turn over the men of Ethelbert for execution as King Yezelnik has decreed.
Gwydra had no answer, but across the field, Brother Fatus did.
A bell! My prophet! My saint! Omatulamir!
Brother Fatus rolled over and managed to slip his bound hands around his tucked feet to bring them in front of him. He flipped up from his knees to his feet and began walking toward Chapel of Bell.
My prophet! My saint! Omatulamir!
Omatulamir?
He's got Vanguard blood, he does. Omatulamir? In the arms of my loving mother.
What is he doing?
He is giving his soul.
Halt now, or face the consequences!
Pothos merely lifted his arms and eyes to the sky.
My prophet! My saint! Oh, Matula, man!
Panlimaros motioned a spearman to his side and pointed emphatically at Pothos.
My prophet! My saint! Oh, Matula!
A missile hit him square in the back.
No!
The wounded monk miraculously regained his footing, impaled though he was, and resumed his march, his arms high and wide.
Kill him! Kill him now!
A barrage of missiles soared at Pothos.
My prophet! My saint! Oh, Matula,
those soldiers around him seemed frozen, awestruck, as were the witnesses within Chapel Abel.
My saint! Oh, Matula,
inspired, Brother Pothos was joined by a dozen other prisoners of Laird Panlimaris, who began to walk toward Chapel Abel. Spears reached for them. Riders broke from Panlimaris' ranks, cutting them down with heavy bronze swords. But not one stopped until the moment of his death. Ahead of them, Brother Pothos, impaled by 7 heavy spears, kept walking and singing. A rider bore down on the monk.
Shoot him dead!
We can't reach!
All winced at the expected moment of Pothos' death. Suddenly, the rider's mount stopped and bucked, then spun about, hurling him to the ground. The horse began pawing the ground wildly, kicking and neighing as if it had gone mad.
My prophet! My saint! Oh,
open the gate! The gate!
When at last the gate opened, there knelt Brother Pothos, a look of complete serenity on his pale face.
Oma Tula Mer.
Across the field, Laird Panlimaris began his charge. The monks dragged Pothos inside and scrambled to close and secure the gate. All eyes turned to Father Artolivan.
Turn them, with all the power of beloved Abel, nay, of Saint Abel, for we have seen now his miracle. Turn them!
Grim-faced, the brothers began sorting their gemstones.
Turn them back!
And at last the flashes ceased and the ground stopped shaking and the spots no longer danced before their eyes. Many men were down, crawling, writhing, burning. The charge had turned to retreat.
You are besieged! You shall never leave!
Your allegiance in the face of Laird Panlimaris has renewed my hope, Lady of Vanguard.
Father Artolivan spoke to Gwydra as the group of leaders made their way across the courtyard toward the main chapel. Across the field, Panlimaris' army was at work setting tents, though many, including the Laird himself, had moved down to the small town of Weathergard.
The inspiration for this day belongs to a monk I do not know.
I would ask one more thing of you, Dame Gwydra. Laird Panlimaris will not be foolish enough to assail your ships, so your way home is all but assured. I ask you to take these men, Laird Ethelbert's at least, so that they may be spared the fate King Yezelnik has decreed. I deserve better.
Dame Gwydra turned to stare directly at the old father. Everyone else stopped as well.
Good Father Artolivan, I would ask a favor of you, privately.
Of course.
The group moved toward the gathered prisoners and Brother Pinar.
What trouble, brother?
None, father. This is Malcolm of Delaval City and Elifrith Pavu of Ethelbert Dosental.
Pinar indicated a sturdy man with piercing blue eyes and curly black hair, the classic Delaval specimen. The other was a swarthy man, no less striking or imposing, obviously of the south, and perhaps with a bit of Baronese blood in him.
Of course. Greetings to both of you this troubling day. The events have unsettled you, no doubt.
We know of King Yezelnik's demands.
Yes.
I was a knight and led Delavor's army, among the elite warriors who rode with Delavor himself.
This, too, is known to me. I am not so old as to have forgotten your pomposity on the day you arrived here at Chapel Abel, all broken and outraged.
Broken and near to death. And save the work of your brothers, I surely would have gone to my grave.
Praise Abel that you did not.
I do. We ask that you do not turn over my friend Elifrith and the other good men of Laird Ethelbert. Most of us have been here for more than a year, some for nearly two. We've been treated well by the brothers, and we have come to know one another as friends and companions, not as enemies.
We will fight one another no longer.
I expected as much, and am glad for you that you have found your way from the darkness. I was just now arranging with Dame Gwydra passage for all of you, or at least for those condemned by King Yezelnik's wrongful order, to vanguard and freedom.
Malcolm and Elifreth looked at each other, a flash of hope fast giving way to looks of grim determination.
I would let my men make that decision.
And I mine.
But this is my home, and I will not leave it now, particularly not now.
What then? To return to your respective lairds that you may be once more pressed into battle?
Nay, never that. For too long we've been fighting and bleeding and dying for the wants of the lairds.
And you are weary of the battle, understandably so. But what then? Do you ask to live out your lives here in Chapel of Bell?
Malcolm straightened again, as did Elifreth, and behind them all the prisoners, hundreds of warriors, stood as one and at rigid attention.
Not weary of battle, weary of the cause.
There is no cause in their battle.
But we're ready to fight if that's what's needed.
To fight? For whom?
For ourselves! To fight for you, and for those monks, and for that one Fortis, who showed us a good way to die. We are here at your call, trusting in your judgment. If you arm us and send us forth, we will crack open Laird Panlamoris' siege. Perhaps we could go out as if freed, and chase them from the field as they naively welcome us into their ranks.
Father Arto Levin was emphatically waving his hands to stop the line of thinking, for it was all too sudden for him and too overwhelming. He looked to Dame Gwydra for support.
You are men I would be proud to have in vanguard.
Gwydra and Arto Levin retreated fast for his private quarters, with Dawson and Brother Jand in tow.
It is all so unsettling.
Callan sat with Kaedale, Cormac, and Milkayla.
This day, I mean.
We have witnessed the depths of treachery, the horror of inhumanity, the miracle of faith, and the hope of men's souls in the span of a single hour.
I have seen it before, on a warm lake in the north. I am no longer surprised by the potential and the depths of the hearts of men.
What will it all mean? How will it end?
Brother Pinnour walked over as Kaedale spoke. He regarded the four before nodding his chin toward a small window in the tower of the large chapel.
They are seeking the answers to that question even as you speak.
You know Father Arto Levin well. What will he do?
You know Dame Gwydra. What of her?
She will not abandon Father Arto Levin to the whims of King Yezelnik. Of that I am sure.
Perhaps the whole of our church will flock to vanguard, and southern haunts be damned.
And what would you do, Brother Giavno, if it were up to you?
I would not have left Mithranadun save to follow Cormac and Branson to the glacier and Ancient Baden. Or at least I pray that, had the decision fallen to me, I would have had the courage of Cormac and Milkayla.
Sit with us, brother. Let us solve the problems of the world and muse on the miracle of Brother Fortis.
A look reflecting both gratitude and great sadness flashed on Giavno's face, and he did indeed join them for a discussion that nearly mirrored that taking place behind the window in the tower.
I ask that you allow me to remain here at Chapel of Bell, and that my ships can sail north and return, laden with soldiers.
Soldiers? To what end?
To the defense of Chapel of Bell. To the support of your courage. I had not thought this war of southern haunts to be the affair of vanguard, but I see now that I was wrong. This is no petty fight between warring lairds. It is a battle for the soul of haunts. And a fight whose victory or loss will determine the future of Vanguard, I do not doubt. For if he wins here, Yezelnik, a man who claims a throne that does not even exist, will turn his eyes and his armies north.
Because you were here when Laird Panlamaris was humiliated, both by Brother Fatus and by the complete rejection of his assault.
It would not have mattered, unless I promised fealty to Yezelnik.
There remains that option.
At the cost of my soul? For how could I give credence and fealty to a man who would murder the men of Ethelbert you hold here? How could I keep my own soul if I were to ally with a man like Panlamaris, after what he just did to the innocent brothers of the Chapel of Precious Memories. I will not abandon principle and what is right for political expediency, Father Ottoleven. I did not do so when ancient Baden demanded freedom to continue his reign of terror against the folk of Vanguard. A sorry and false woman I would be to turn my back on my fellows to the south.
This is truly an unexpected day. A day that will echo in the songs of the bards for lifetimes hence, perhaps. Or one that will quickly spell our utter doom. I do not know.
Aye, and that's where a measure of courage is needed. And without that measure, what's worth singing about anyway?
Father Otto Leven looked at Dawson incredulously.
Do you understand now why I keep him around?
Do you understand the magnitude of what you are proposing?
I will annex Chapel Abel for Vanguard, but fear not, for you will continue with all freedom to do as your heart instructs. My action will be only to reinforce Vanguard's commitment to you and your brothers.
You will be declaring war with Delaval City and Palmares Town, both of which can muster a garrison much larger than Vanguard's.
Then we will fight better.
Or die better. Like Brother Fatus. I'm not knowing how long they will be singing of our choices this day. But the grandsons of the grandsons of the grandsons will be singing of Brother Fatus, of that I am sure.
For Brother Fatus, then, it is a good way to die.
There is one more thing that must be done this day. De Gilb will no doubt begin a rival order in Palmares Town. It has already happened, I am certain, since many brothers were not among those executed on the field. Laird Panlamaris will seek to justify his stand here in any case.
Your reasoning is sound, I fear.
We have seen the miracle. All of us. The strength of Brother Fatus, the turning and bucking of the horse when Fatus was surely doomed before he reached the gates of Chapel.
You will finalize the beatification of Abel.
Blessed Abel. From this day forth, let it be known that we are the Order of Blessed Abel, the Abelican Church, and that this place will be named Saint Abel. No, Saint Mirabel.
Here, then.
Master Riandu handed Bonagran a long knife.
Do it yourself.
From the sill of a high window in Chapel Pride, Branson listened carefully to every word. A short while earlier, the monks had spoken of King Yeselnik's edict that all prisoners of Delaval be released and all those taken from Ethelbert's ranks be executed. Branson was glad of their reaction, particularly the angry foot-stomping of Riandu. For some reason, he did not quite understand. Branson needed to believe the best of this man. Branson shrank back when Bonagran had stormed into the chapel, full of unfocused anger and agitation.
Do not try my patience. My road has been long and wearying. I have no tolerance for your stubbornness this day.
I have released the Delaval prisoners, against my better judgment, but for your own sake.
That was half the edict.
You would have me murder helpless captives.
King Yeselnik did not demand that of you.
Of course. I am simply to turn them over to you so that you might employ some valorless and immoral cad to stab them and beat them. How easy it is for King Yeselnik to make such a demand, his own hands clean of the blood. How easy it is for Bonagran to follow such a command.
Silence!
Then bloody your own hands, warrior!
Do you think these hands clean? In this war and a dozen before, do you think I have not killed many men?
These are helpless prisoners!
Many men undeserving? Many whose only crime was to serve the losing Laird? So stained are these hands that your own Abel could not wash the blood from them. There is no place in your heaven for Bonagran.
Then take this dagger and murder the 5 men of Ethelbert held within Chapel Pride. Cut their throats or stab their hearts.
Riandu held the dagger again, and Bonagran narrowed his eyes and stared at him angrily.
Because you cannot. You are a warrior, not a murderer.
This is an execution of the convicted. No murder.
Murder? These men have committed no crimes.
They are to be turned over. All loyal to Ethelbert are to be executed by order of King Yeselnik.
You'll not kill them.
Their loyalty to Laird Ethelbert dooms them.
You cannot ask a man to exchange his loyalty to an opposing Laird. You know his march. But if they expressed loyalty to a third party, One neutral in the war, perhaps?
None who don the robes of the Order of Abel fall under the edict of King Yezanek, certainly.
Of course. Because then they will serve the Order and not Laird Ethelbert. It is curious that you mention that, new Laird of Pride, for this very morning. All five of the remaining prisoners expressed just such an interest. I happen to have several extra robes that will fit them well.
I will see them dressed as such, and this very day. Else they will face the wrath of King Yezanek.
Do not hesitate. It is imperative that you react as soon as I indicate, true and fast.
My pleasure, my king.
Bronwyn was a 300-pound behemoth of a man. He carried his great axe casually on one shoulder and could wield it with one hand as easily as most men could wave a short sword. Bronwyn's head was shaven and looked as if it had been melted atop his massive shoulders, large rolls of skin falling down the back of that neck and great jowls that seemed to grow out of his collarbones in the front.
They may come to his defense. Their magic is potent.
One cut, me king.
Drawing power from the imposing brute so readily at his command, Yezelnik stepped a little more lightly as they ascended the long stairs of Chapel Delaval. Until recently, this church of the Order of Abel had been known as the Chapel of Weeping Brothers, a name dating to the slaughter of the first monks in the city who took their own lives rather than denounce Abel in the great tragedy of Cordon Row. Yezelnik and his entourage of a dozen armed and armored guards shoved past the brothers, who answered their knock on the heavy wooden doors.
Father Pendergrast, immediately! And bring forth all the prisoners delivered to you who have not yet been ushered north to Chapel Abel.
The prisoners, King Yezelnik?
At once! All of them, and in chains!
Yezelnik waved the young monk away emphatically. In moments, Father Pendergrast appeared with three of the higher-ranking brothers.
I sent one of your young brothers to fetch Ethelbert's men. To save you the trouble, of course.
You have seen the edict of Father Otto Leven of Chapel Abel, who rules my order?
Of course. A meritless writ I will ignore, as will you. Where are the prisoners?
King Yezelnik, Chapel Delaval serves at your pleasure, as it served at the pleasure of Laird Delaval before you.
King Delaval.
Yes, of course. King Delaval. But we serve Father Otto Leven above all else.
Get the prisoners.
My king, I cannot.
Yezelnik gave a bored glance at the giant Bronwyn, who came forward suddenly and with a single chop of the axe cut Father Pendergrast apart from shoulder to hip.
Who is the new father of Chapel Delaval?
The monks all stammered and stuttered until finally one pointed to a man about the same age of Pendergrast.
Congratulations, father. Now send your minions to retrieve the prisoners.
Never taking his withering gaze from poor, frightened, newly appointed Father Denigan, Yezelnik watched as a dozen ragged men were led into the nave in chains. Yezelnik smiled widely, a most wicked and pleasing idea coming to him. He reached to Bronwyn's belt and pulled the man's bronze short sword from its sheath, then tossed it on the ground before Denigan.
You kill the first one. Then hand the blade to the next most superior brother and on down the line.
I am no warrior, King Yezelnik.
Kill him now, or explain your failing to Father Pendergrast.
Hands trembling, Denigan picked up the sword and moved on shaky legs to the nearest of the prisoners, a young man barely out of his teens.
No! Please don't do this! I beg of you!
Do it!
Denigan dropped the blade to the floor.
Pathetic! All of you!
With a flick of his white hand, he motioned to two guards, who rushed to the chapel doors and flung them wide. More soldiers charged into the chapel.
Arrest the brothers and drag those miserable wretches from Ethelbert into the streets! Bronwyn, I trust that you will find ways to execute them that will amuse me.
He led Bronwyn's gaze over to Denigan on his knees now.
Wound him, but leave him with enough to make the journey to Chapel Abel, bearing my response to Father Otto Leven.
And your answer will be?
The brother who delivered Otto Leven's treasonous writ put his head in a sack.
Bronwyn's grin nearly took in his ears. The next morning, Brother Denigan felt a heavy boot kick against his back, shoving him from Delaval's city north gate on the eastern side of the great river. In his hand he held a sack that bore the severed head of Brother Piastefan, the courier from Father Artolevan, his mouth locked wide open in a final horrified scream.
With all haste to Chapel Abel, and you, monk, tell your Father Artolevan that when I am soon finished with Ethelbert, the Order of Abel will be held accountable for all his treason. This is our time of great need, the moment of triumph for the line of Delaval, and I will never forget that Artolevan and your church did not stand with me.
Denigan managed to shift to a sitting position and looked back vacantly at the young tyrant.
Oh, about that boy you were too weak to kill. We stripped him naked, bound his hands, and put him in a sack with some poisonous snakes this morning. Perhaps you heard his screams. They lasted a pleasantly long time.
I knew that Yezelnik was an impulsive child, but this surprises me.
Branson spoke to Jameson when they regrouped in the woods behind Chapel Pride.
You knew he had done as much. We heard this at the other chapel, and you said then that Yezelnik's murderous mind didn't surprise you.
Not Yezelnik. Nothing bad that ever comes from him would surprise me. The reactions of Brother Riandu and Bonagran, however. I never thought them so possessed of moral boundaries, especially not Bonagran.
Is that the reason? Or are both of them weary already of King Yezelnik?
Could it be that King Yezelnik is so far beyond the moral boundaries that even the always callous lairds will be put off by his demands?
Or it might be that these callous lairds you speak of have a bit of sense and know that they can only ask so much of those they dominate before they find the tines of a pitchfork aim their way. It didn't take too much convincing by Gwydra to get the people of Vanguard to turn and fight against ancient Baden.
Yezelnik is an idiot.
An impetulant one for sure.
Impetulant?
Aye.
I don't know that word.
But you know what it means.
Impatient? Impetuous? Petulant?
Yes. It's from an old hunter's song. The Her Story of History.
Her Story?
You can figure that part out.
True, but why?
When you live alone in the forest, you learn to speak little and listen a lot. Putting words together to make a quicker point saves you breath.
Crazy V would have had a Her Story.
And a good one. And more than a few who knew her would be embarrassed by the tales told of V.
Red-assed? What did you call him?
Who? Yezelnik?
Impetulant?
Fits him, don't it?
Better than any. King Yezelnik the Impetulant. We should put it on his headstone. Soon.
Then let us start the carving of king and stone.
Jameson paused and let the moment slip aside, watching Branson as the young man glanced back toward Pride.
You are proud of the lad and the monks. Their actions in dodging Yezelnik's verdict gives you hope.
I cannot deny that. My relationship with Brother Riandu is complicated.
He's the closest thing you've got to family after your wife and mother. Is it time for us to go and see him?
Branson nodded, but did not move.
You think it harder to test that writ of passage now? Now you're hoping they might honor it, and now, with such hopes, you're more afraid of how you'll feel if they don't. Put your mask down over your eyes and walk openly through the town. The people here will remember you. They saved you once. Maybe once again.
The gasps of recognition began as soon as Jameson led him from the forest and onto the main road far across the way from Chapel Pride. The pair moved toward Chapel Pride with many people following in their wake. They knew the highwayman here in Pride Town, and they loved him. They walked through the chapel's outer wall, a flood of memories greeting Branson the moment he stepped again onto Chapel Pride's courtyard. Up the white stone path, the doors to the chapel proper were also opened, brothers peering with obvious apprehension. Branson moved into the large foyer, Jameson beside him, and before he could even ask the astonished young brother standing there to see the leaders, Master Riandu appeared, flanked by several others.
Branson! What are you doing here? Are you mad you left under a condition of a strict penalty?
Good to meet you too.
And I return to insist that the condition be revoked.
Are you a madman?
Branson reached over his shoulder and produced Dame Gwydra's writ of passage from the scroll tube he had tied diagonally across his back.
On the contrary, I find this to be a most glorious day, Master Riandu.
You!
Any intention Branson had of parleying here, of letting Dame Guidra's writ carry any weight for him, disappeared as he swung about. Great axe in hand, a look of sheer outrage on his face, Bonnegrand didn't seem to be in any mood for talking. The laird charged, his axe upright before him. Branson drew his sword with his right hand, pushed Jameson to the side with his left. When Bonnegrand went into his sudden spin, axe flying to arm's length, Branson was already moving. He shifted to his left, dancing past the retreating Jameson. Bonnegrand recovered almost immediately, stopping his short swing as soon as he realized the highwayman's dodge. Reorienting himself, he squared up with his opponent.
Are we to do this dance again? And who will die this time when you throw your weapon at me in frustration?
That last question made Bonnegrand narrow his eyes with anger. Branson countered with a sudden stab of his sword. Bonnegrand stepped ahead and threw forward his right hand, the lower on his axe, punching the handle at the highwayman's face. Branson dropped under it and came on lower this time. Bonnegrand had to throw his feet out behind him wildly to save his shin.
Read it!
Master Riandu still held the writ of passage rolled in his hand.
I did not return to Pride to fight you.
I told you to stay away, forevermore.
Things have changed.
The worse for you.
Bonnegrand leaped up and forward, clearing the highwayman. The warrior landed in a forward roll and came up and around with a great sidelong slash designed to keep the highwayman far away. The sword blade hit the axe handle before Bonnegrand could build any momentum. The highwayman slid it right up to slam hard at the crook between axe handle and head.
I don't want to fight you! Hold, Laird Bonnegrand!
Bonnegrand pulled his left hand free of his trapped axe, retracting immediately and moved to slug the highwayman. Bonnegrand flew backward before he had barely begun the swing, jolted by a blast of lightning-like energy.
You cheat with gemstones!
He has a writ of passage from Dame Guidra of Vanguard, forgiving him his crimes of theft and praising him for the great victory in the north.
What?
I fought for her. I killed ancient Bardon of the Samhastes and freed her people from the grip of horrible war.
That means nothing to me.
In return, Dame Guidra has pardoned me for my past difficulties.
A writ of passage.
Does that include your murder of King Delaval?
My what?
I thought not.
Bonnegrand came in hard, swinging left to right. The highwayman chopped a shortened downstroke, sliding his sword again along the blade to hook the axe under the head. He continued his rotation through the backhand, high over their heads, then down to the left and low to the right, where an extra shove of that sword nearly swung Bonnegrand around. The Laird of Pride fought to hold his balance, but didn't even recognize that the highwayman had disengaged and turned his sword with such precision and speed that the tip was in at Bonnegrand's throat before he had begun to move his axe again.
Are we to continue this folly all day? Read the writ of passage.
You murdered King Delaval!
His sword is whole.
The highwayman glanced back at him curiously, then looked to his magnificent blade.
He repaired it!
What are you talking about? My sword, my mother Sinui's sword, has never been broken.
The sword that slew King Delaval was broken in half, in the man's chest.
Surely not a blade like this.
Exactly so.
Riandu replied, pointing to Bonnegrand. When he looked to the laird, Branson saw Bonnegrand drop the top half of a delicately curving blade from a sheath on his hip, a scabbard that Branson had thought for a long dagger, and empty since no hilt had shown there.
The blade that killed King Delaval, so much like your own. Too much like your own!
Branson turned his blade over before his eyes, noting the unmistakable similarities.
Where did you get that?
From King Delaval's chest. And for it, King Yezelnik has declared you guilty of murder.
But it is not my blade.
It is too similar. Possessed by one of like mind and training as you.
I was in Vanguard when Delaval was murdered. Dame Guidra will confirm my claim. Last time I was in Delaval City was before the winter, and Laird Delaval...
King Delaval!
King Delaval. He was very much alive when I left, and I have never returned. That is not my sword, and I have never seen another sword of this type in my life until just this moment.
Bonnegrand stared at him hard. If he was softening at all to Branson's reasoning, he wasn't showing it.
Does the truth not matter?
Not to King Yezelnik.
What is this insanity that has gripped all of Haunts?
Branson spun around, sheathing his sword in a single fluid movement to address all in the chapel.
Is there no limit to the misery these lairds will inflict for the sake of their own gain?
Enough of your speeches!
You have seen Dame Guaidra's writ of passage. She offered to me and my family a full pardon in exchange for my actions on her behalf against Ancient Bardin. Will you honor her decree?
Your family? Kellen de Warding, her daughter, you mean?
Yes.
For them, yes. For you, no. Not until you clear your name with King Yeselnik, and I think that is unlikely.
And if I do, am I to be welcomed back in pride with Callan and Cadale beside me?
Yes.
Barnagran?
Yes. I'm sick of it all.
I did not mean for you to kill Pridey. But I went to his tower to protect my love, and I would do so again.
Silence. I have given you what you desire, and that is all I can. Ask no more of me. Understand, Highwayman, that I'll not tolerate any of your indiscretions should you ever return.
I will return.
King Yeselnik will never agree.
But my family, you said—
They can return to Pride Town at their leisure. That poor woman, Kellen, never deserved the sack, though her sniveling lover surely did. The Samhastes are long gone from Pride Town, so I care not if the Dewarnes walk here openly. But you remain another matter.
I will clear my name.
I am tasked with killing you.
Care to try again?
Branson!
Be gone from my town and my holding.
I ask two things of you before I leave.
The Bear of Hans put his hands on his hips and stared at Branson hard.
First, I would speak with Master Riondu.
You have until noontime hour.
And second, allow me that broken sword.
It is not mine to give.
Let me study it, at least. Please. I believe that to be a Jester II blade.
Like your own.
Perhaps.
Panagran tossed the blade to the floor at Branson's feet. With trembling hands, the young man picked it up and turned it over and over, pointing it away from his eyes so that he could study the break. Wrapped metal, just like his own sword. Only the Jester II were known to create such blades.
Then Laird Ethelbert has hired Jester II mercenaries from Bear.
No.
It is such a blade.
Jester II are not mercenaries. They cannot—
That blade slew King Delaval. The wielder of that blade, part of a small band by all reports, and dressed as you are by all accounts, scaled the castle walls and defeated King Delaval and his elite warriors in short order.
May I keep this?
Bonagran held out his big hand. Branson reluctantly set the sword blade in it. Branson turned to Master Riandu.
In private.
The monk nodded and started for a side room.
Noontime. Then be far from Pride, and return not other than on pain of death, unless King Yeselnik has declared your innocence and freedom.
Master Riandu's visage and posture changed noticeably when he and Branson were away from Bonagran and alone in a side room of Chapel Pride.
My heart warms at seeing you walking so tall and straight.
You saw it before I left, when you took me to kill Laird Pridey.
But that was because of the Soul Stone.
As is this.
Branson brushed his long hair aside and indicated the brooch set in his forehead. Riandu moved closer, eyeing the marvelous piece of jewelry.
Yes, but even so, you seem more comfortable and stable.
I am.
All the gems. Are they magical? Where did you get such a marvelous piece?
They are, and this was put upon my forehead by Father Otto Leven of Chapel Abel.
Father Otto Leven gave that to you?
I just said as much.
It is unexpected.
That he would offer it or that I would take it?
Both.
I served Dame Guider in exchange for her writ of passage. I dealt a great blow to the Samhastes when I took Ancient Bardin's head from his shoulders. Father Arthur Leven knows that I am no enemy to him or his church. Does Brother Riondu?
Of course.
Branson eyed him doubtfully, then smiled as he produced a second parchment, the writ from Father Arthur Leven. He handed it to Riandu, who read it with eyes so wide that they seemed as if they might roll from their sockets.
I understand your actions here, Branson. Perhaps better than anyone. I saw the punishments you endured at the hands of the people of Pride at the demands of Laird Pridey.
Punishments my innocent father endured? At the hands of Samhastes and Laird Pridey?
At the hands of Chapel Pride. What am I to say, old friend? I did not approve of the treatment of Garibald, nor do I think the treatment offered to your mother and father fair or wise, though I was not involved in those decisions. I was not a voice of power from within Chapel Pride.
Riandu's voice trailed off when Branson put up a hand.
I am glad that you were not punished for your actions at Castle Pride.
Master Bathalaeus did not recover from his fall. I am not proud of how I attained my current position, but I am grateful to Father Otto Leven and the Masters of Chapel of Bell for their understanding and faith in me.
I have not forgotten the sins of your chapel, but neither have I forgotten the day you helped me with the chamber pots, so when you washed the filth from me. I am not your enemy, Master Riandu.
It does my heart good to see you standing so straight and tall. I do not lament the passing of the Stork.
Even if in his stead comes the Highwayman, whom King Yezelnik hates above all?
King Yezelnik is wrong.
The startling words had Branson lifting his eyebrows.
And more the fool for the edict issued to Father Otto Leven. He would have our order act as executioners and go back on our promises. Does he believe that the holdings of Haunts will rally to his flag when he would so callously murder the many men whose only crime was to serve the lads they had known all their lives?
I watched your conversation with Bonnegran earlier this morning regarding the disposition of the prisoners, well, now brothers, it would seem. I was in a high window overlooking the nave.
I would not have allowed the prisoners to be killed.
You handed Bonnegran the knife.
Because he would never have killed them. Bonnegran is no murderer.
Garabond.
His fire has dimmed with the wisdom of age. He has served the people of Pride well as steward and now as laird. They have come to trust him and love him. And they follow him into battle.
I hope you are right, for the sake of the people of Pride.
Will you return to Pride Town when you have cleared your name?
Branson replied with a grin that revealed nothing. For only when he had heard that question had he realized that it hardly mattered. The entire reason for his journey to Pride, to secure a home for his growing family, hardly mattered to him at that time. The Geste too had come to Haunts. While Branson was meeting with Master Riandu, Jameson Sequin walked out of Chapel Pride and over to the next impressive structure and soon found himself standing before Laird Bonnegran.
Jameson Sequin at your service, good Laird of Pride Town. Come from Vanguard to your door.
If you wish to ingratiate your Lady Gwydra to me, you would have been wiser to come into Pride Town separate from the Highwayman.
Wouldn't have even have found my way to your town.
You find this amusing?
All of it, in a sad manner. Guess that's why I spend most of my time walking the forests of Vanguard and Alpinador.
What do you want?
I'm a good friend of Dame Gwydra and empowered to speak for her. I'd be a sorry emissary if I didn't pay a visit to the Laird.
A visit? Should I set a banquet table?
I'm not your enemy, nor is Dame Gwydra.
The politics of this world are not mine own to decide.
Oh, just yours to laugh at, helplessly. Oh, I see that in your eyes, Laird Bonnegran of Pride. Tired of war, tired of stupid lairds and stupider kings and stupider reasons for men killing men.
You pretend to know more than you do. I have no time for your pointless banter. You came seeking audience, and as you claim to be a spokesman for Dame Gwydra, I granted your request. Do you have anything of value to say, or are you just here to annoy me? Do not try my patience. Other men who have done so have lost their heads.
That wouldn't be a wise choice for you. Gwydra's got no fight with you, nor do I, and I doubt King Yezelnik would appreciate you starting a war with Vanguard.
What do you want?
I want to tell you of Branson, the Highwayman. He had nothing to do with the murder of King Delavor. He was in Vanguard, maybe even Alpinador at the time. And I've been with him every moment since he sailed across the gulf with Dame Gwydra.
Gwydra is in Haunts proper.
Left her a Chapel of Bell. I'm not thinking she's pleased with what she's seeing here in the south.
That is not my concern.
But the Highwayman is.
And?
He had nothing to do with the murder of Delavor.
So you believe that matters a whit?
Not in your world, but I think it does to you.
Bonnegran stared at him hard.
He's a fine fighter, that one. He could have killed you.
Your insults do not serve Dame Gwydra here.
No insult, just observation.
Bonnegran continued his unflinching stare.
But he didn't stick you, did he? And he could have, in the fight you started.
Do you have a point here, other than to insult?
No insult intended. I'm only saying so because I'm thinking you should take a closer look at this young man you call the Highwayman. There's more to him than you think.
Thank you for your advice. I will inform Dame Guaidra that her observant emissary is a wise man.
Branson had nothing to do with Delavore's death. That doesn't matter to King Yeselnik, but I believe it matters to you.
Take care your words.
Branson's not the reason you're so mad right now. I see the twist in your face, Laird Bonnegran of Pride. You know what is right and what simply is. When what simply is doesn't match with what is right, it sticks you harder than Branson's sword ever could.
You presume a lot, emissary.
I've seen a lot, good lad.
Is there anything more?
I'll pass along your well wishes to Dame Guaidra when I see her again.
Dame Guaidra sat on the balcony of her lavish room at St. Mirabel, looking across the expansive courtyard to the front wall and beyond, where the first flickers of evening campfires began to sprout among the ranks of Laird Panley Maris's besieging force.
Second thoughts?
Guaidra turned to regard Dawson McKeague, managing a slight smile.
He says that he is the King of Haunts, and so he may well soon be.
We do not know how far south the prince managed to go. And some of the monks here who've been to Ethelbert Dos Entos say that it's a formidable city.
Let us hope. If Laird Ethelbert can hold back the tides of Yeselnik, then our chances here are greater indeed, but...
But if he comes against us with all he's got, then you're wondering if you chose right in standing by the monks, because we're sure to lose. But you knew that. And didn't we talk about the songs they'd be singing when we're long gone from the world?
I know.
But now that it seems real, you're wondering about what your choice will mean for them that follow you.
Perhaps we should sail for Vanguard. All of us, with the monks and the prisoners too.
That'd take a lot of boats.
Or fast ships turning back.
To what purpose? He'll come for you. For all of us.
We know the ways of Vanguard. Yeselnik does not.
I'm thinking his armies will cut new ways.
It may be the wiser course. Perhaps the people of Haunts will have no will to...
We'll not abandon St. Mirabel.
Father Primujan entered through Guaidra's partially open door with brothers Giavno and Jean beside him.
Not for Chapel Pelinor?
Father Ottolevin has made a bold stand, and we stand with him above all. Brother Fatus has shown us the way.
The way to die.
St. Mirabel is the most defensible structure in the world, both in natural blessings and constructs. The brothers have built and fortified this place over the decades. The only approach by land is up a steep hill, and a slow-moving army. We all witnessed the fate of Laird Panlamaris's charge. The small, narrow harbor is nearly unreachable by any who do not know the rocky reefs about it, and it too would be easily defended by merely a handful of brothers with the proper gemstones. A single sinking could prevent other sizable ships from even attempting the approach. And even if Yeselnik's sailors somehow gained the wharf area, the tunnels are easily defended, or if need be, easily shut down.
You inspire confidence, Father.
Look again to that wall, milady. The wall of St. Mirabel is thicker and taller than any in Haunts. And forget not that behind the wall wait scores of brothers well trained in the use of potent magic.
I saw as much when Panlamaris dared approach.
Then we're decided. St. Mirabel is part of Vanguard, if Father Artolevin agrees.
He is on his way here this very moment, to do just that as he indicated when first you proposed it.
And this chapel will hold strong against King Yeselnik. A safe harbor for any who want no part of his Haunts.
Would that it were that simple. When Yeselnik is through with Ethelbert, he will likely reinforce Panlamaris' siege.
St. Mirabel can hold forever and longer. They have access to all the water and food they would ever need.
I do not doubt the might of this sacred place. When I first sighted Chapel... St. Mirabel from Dawson's boat, my heart leaped in awe. I do not doubt the strength of this place or the resilience of those who reside here. Of all my holdings, this one, on the front line of the expected war and under siege even now, is the one for which I least fear.
Lady?
While we are trapped here, what mischief will Yeselnik wreak behind us in Vanguard? With a few of the great warships of Delavall or Palmaris Town to blockade us, what might those still in Vanguard do against the approach of Yeselnik's thousands, should he choose that route? To whom will they look to lead them, with Dame Guaidra, Father Primujan, and so many of our finest warriors? here, south of the Gulf.
Never said it'd be easy.
Almost as if to accentuate Dawson's point, Father Artolivan knocked on the partially open door then and shuffled in, and old indeed did he appear.
We are part of Vanguard. Saint Mirabel is within the domain of Dame Guidra. That is my decision, though I do not come to it easily. Your generous offer is accepted, good lady. May Abel watch over us all. You will forgive me, but I must retire early.
Father Primujan nodded to Brother Giavno, who rushed to catch up to Father Artolivan and help him back to his private quarters.
I worry for him. These are difficult times. All the more so because of the decline of Sam Haste's, making this a time that should be the golden age of our church.
It will be, if good people stand strong.
Stand strong and sail swift.
That is indeed our plan and our need. We can hold Saint Mirabel, of that I have no doubt. But you must lead my ships with cunning and skill. We cannot allow Palmaris Town to seal off the sea routes and control the coast. You have been beside me for so long, my friend Dawson. And now what I ask of you is no less than I asked of Branson, Jond, and the others in sending them after Ancient Baden. We must be mobile, quick, and strong. The fewer options we offer to King Yeselnik, the more likely he will be to accept any terms or compromise.
Fair winds and following seas.